Washington Wednesdays, every Wednesday throughout the college football season.
And, of course, joining us on Washington Wednesdays, Jake Heaps, as we look back at the win over Utah. And I guess you could say it's a typical type of Chris Peterson type of win in the sense that, one, they finally got the running game going. Two, they had great defense. And three, they had enough out of the quarterback to be able to get that victory on the road.
No doubt. It was a very good game against a very tough opponent in Utah. I mean, we all knew that this was going to be a heavyweight battle. Two really tough teams that really know how to play good defense and run the football, and I think to be able to come out with a two touchdown victory is a big thing. I think there was a lot also that was left on the table for the Huskies, and to me, obviously you want to see more, but it's a positive thing that they can still improve as a football team.
What is it about what Chris is able to do? Because in some ways, I guess he uses some of the model that Pete Carroll does. It's what he sees in defensive backs, and he's able to get a great secondary and somehow find a way to get the pass rushers that are necessary. I know that was a big question, but what is it about Chris Peterson's eye that seems to work so well with a defensive player?
Yeah, I think also you have to credit Jimmy Lake and being able to find these elite DBs. He's done a great job recruiting down in Southern California. I think Pete has always had a great eye. I think he had to have a great eye when he was at Boise State. He wasn't getting the best talent. He had to really find those diamonds in the rough. And now that he's one of the best programs in the country, now he's able to go after these, top-level kids. And even then, he's not going after the everyone consensus five-star guy. He wants to find guys that fit his mold, fit his style of defense, style of offense. And I think that's a unique thing about Washington. They recruit for their style. They don't recruit just to get the big guys.
Yeah, what is so different compared to all the other schools that you've seen? Because, again, there's a very uniqueness because, I mean, much like, as you can say, Nick Saban, even though Peterson goes for a different type of defensive player.
Right.
He goes against the grain, I guess, in what's supposed to be a quarterback passing type of college game.
Yeah, no, it's great. I personally love it because, and ultimately, John, I think you're seeing this all throughout college football, and Trent Dilfer says it all the time, is you're really starting to see a deterioration in quarterback play and also offensive line play due to these spread offenses and the RPO systems and all of that. It's not all bad, but when you are relying and making your quarterback one-dimensional in terms of what he's looking at, you're ultimately hurting him. And so UW and Alabama, for example, have pro-style systems, and the system that Bush Hamden's running is coming from the NFL. So Jake Browning, these other quarterbacks that get to go into this UW offense, they're benefiting greatly. And you see Miles Gaskins, and hopefully we can get Savon Ahmed going. But I love to see the pro-style offense. I think if you have the personnel to do it, I still think it's the dominant offense to run in college football. The key is having the right personnel.
Oh, yeah, no question about it. Now, again, even with these victories, it seems like poor Jake Browning has to continue
right.
to take more criticism.
I know.
What is it about Jake that it's like, I mean, here he's stuck around here. You figure senior quarterbacks usually have a great chance to, have a big edge. I mean, he's winning the games right now. He didn't get the opener, but it's like, boy, he's taking a lot of heat.
I know, John. It's pretty remarkable when you think about it. I mean, he's broken lots of records at UW. He's been a very good football player. He's been a great leader. Hasn't been a guy that's faced off the field issues. He's a very likable kid. And so I think ultimately what it comes down to is, I said it earlier with Salk, is that he's making too many big mistakes that make you go, what can you possibly be thinking in this moment? The interception, running back, 10 yards and throwing an interception to the defensive lineman who almost, if he doesn't fumble the ball, poor guy, scores a pick six. Those are the types of things you cannot have when you are a four-year starter. You're a four-year starter, and you cannot make those types of mistakes. And I think that's what everybody wants to see eliminated. And if he can eliminate those mistakes, I think everybody's happy because Jake's playing good football. Outside of these two to three plays a game. He's playing really good football, and I just want to see him hopefully, you know, limit those plays.
Mm-hmm. Well, I tell you what, it's been a crazy start to the Pac-12 season. I mean, have you ever seen the situation in UCLA worse than it is? Chip Kelly goes back, and now there's almost like mutiny with their 0-3 start. USC's now having to increase tempo in practice because they're off to a 1-2 start.
Right.
I mean, a lot of surprises right now.
Yeah, I mean, John, I definitely would not have picked this. I would not have anticipated that this was going to happen, especially with the Chip Kelly UCLA team. I think that they're kind of finally figuring themselves out. I think they got their quarterback and Dorian Thompson-Robinson. I think he's shown some flashes and shown what he can be. And so I expect them to progress throughout the season. They faced a couple tough opponents early on. But, you know, USC, for example, I mean, everybody had them highly ranked. And I think what you're seeing overall is just a group that, one, didn't come ready to play. And you got a freshman quarterback who's making a lot of great plays, but also making freshman mistakes. And there's a growing process through that.
No doubt. And so, you wonder, wow, that's very surprising because you thought that both those schools would be in good shape. I mean, who's impressed you so far in the Pac-12?
Absolutely. I think the one school that has kind of impressed me, and this is kind of going to go against the grain here, is Oregon State. It's not one that is going to jump out to you in the win-loss column, but I think that they are definitely improving as a program. I think Jonathan Smith's doing a good job with those guys. They show improvement. They show that they've got something working in the fire, and I expect this program to, you know, kind of come out of the dungeon here in the next couple years.
Interesting. So coming up this week, it's going to be Arizona State. I guess you could call it a team that's been disappointing in a game, another 7:30 game, which of course isn't necessarily popular with the fans or Chris Peterson,
right?
But it is a television game, but nevertheless, this looks like it could be a pretty good stretch for the Huskies with BYU and UCLA coming up in the next couple weeks.
Yeah, no, this is going to be a challenge. I mean, they're going to have to. I think, John, this is not going to be an easy road for UW. They're consistently going to have to answer week in and week out and prove not only that they can beat teams, but that they can beat teams convincingly. If they want a chance at the college football playoffs, they can't just go undefeated. They've got to win convincingly, and versus Arizona State team, this is a great opportunity. They've had a lot of momentum. People are talking about them. Herm Edwards is doing a great job. And so, again, I think ultimately this is a deal where the defense, I would expect them to take care of business versus an offense in Arizona State that hasn't really done much to wow you. But, again, it comes down to the offense. How efficient can the offense be? Can we finally see them reach their expectations? And I would hope so.
Yeah, that would be something that can be good. And I don't know, what do you think of what Herm has done? Because a guy that has been away from college football so long,
right?
Then a little bit better than I think and people thought.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I would be one of those guys. Just off his presser alone, his opening press conference, right?
Yeah.
It left you head scratching a little bit. But I think Herm Edwards, at the end of the day, has done a phenomenal job hiring. And that's the whole key to college football, is the people that you hire is so important because you have such little time. It's not the NFL. You don't have as much time with them as you do, or you have more time with them in the NFL than you do in college. And so the teachers that you have to have, the program that you have to set up, it has to be one that is cohesive, and you've got really good teachers and really good recruiters. And I think Herm's done a really good job in that aspect, and it's really paying off for him. And I think ultimately, as he gets a successful program going, we know the dynamic personality that he is, and he's going to do a phenomenal job in recruiting when he's sitting down with mom and dad in their living room. So it's just a matter of being able to put the product on the field.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it was kind of interesting because I know that Ray Anderson, it was his former agent, and ended up being the guy that hired him as
right.
the head coach. And people were kind of scratching their head at that. And the thought was, that Herm would come in there and keep the two coordinators, but the two coordinators left, and he's like, whoa, what happened there?
Yeah, I think the big thing was, that's what everybody was hoping for, and it was kind of a head-scratching deal, like, hey, was this a good old boy, you know, taking care of my guy type of hire, and had people really concerned, because the thing was, Arizona State was a good football program. Todd Graham had built a good football program in Arizona State, and he had two really good coordinators, and from my understanding, Herm, when he met with those guys, the coordinators themselves said, hey, I don't think this is going to be a good fit for me. I don't think that were going to mesh very well. And I think Herm, I think ultimately it was better for Herm because now Herm's coming in, being able to implement his style, his way, and having guys that are on board and not 1 foot in, 1 foot out.
I know before you came in to help us out on this segment, you were playing ping pong, I guess, with Mike Salt. Can you give us an update on how that went?
I really don't want to talk about it. I was really trying to shake off the rust here. You know, Salk, we don't need to give that guy any more credit.
So, in other words, he might have been having the edge over you in this one because of the rust?
Yeah. I mean, John, you're putting me on the spot. Sorry. But, yeah, he swept me. I'm not happy about it. I'm gonna work harder. I'm going to practice, get the ping pong table at my house.
Now do you feel like Jake Heaps? I mean, no. Do you feel like, I mean, Jake Browning?
Yeah, I. it's tough. You know, it's a tough spot for me right now. So I just got to work hard, and you know, I'll come back better next week.
Yeah, I trust that you will. So very good.
Hey, I appreciate Jake Heaps, that, John.
Thank you for joining us and giving us Washington Wednesday.
Absolutely.
All right, you can check out the show 710 Sports app, driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we will grade some things. We'll get the report card going. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
It's time for The Report Card with The Professor.
And The Report Card is what we do every day. We grade the good, the bad, the ugly, the smart, the stupid, the brilliant things that are happening and the non-brilliant things that are happening, whether it comes out of the mouth of a coach, a player, whether it comes out of just about anything that you want to hear. We'll give you what's going to happen and then attach a grade to it. So, Maura, what do we have?
Well, the Red Sox have not officially clinched the AL East quite yet, but apparently the Red Sox have the banner all ready to go. It was on its way to Fenway Park when it somehow fell off the truck, and it was found by some diehard Red Sox fans. Here's the report from Boston 25 News.
Outside Fenway Park, banners remind us of the glory years. There's always room for more. In fact, this one looks nice.
We're Red Sox fans, yeah, 100%.
Louis Iacuzzi, James Amaral, and Randy Bolasieri say they were out for coffee on McGrath Highway in Somerville Monday morning when they spotted something in the road.
One person ran it over a little bit, like hit it a little bit, and then I'm like, pull over, this is something, what is it?
Louis says the banner was wrapped in brown paper, and they waited until they got out of the car to open it.
We thought it was jerseys or something like that, that's what it looked like, and then when we unraveled it and we seen what it was, we just knew it was something big.
We brought it behind Green Street Park. We opened it up. It was then we realized what we had.
Of course, you're wondering, how did the banner end up on the highway before the team even clinched? A spokesperson for the Red Sox says it fell off the back of a vendor's delivery truck. The three friends said they want to return the banner to the team as soon as they can. Instead of being superstitious, they believe it will bring good luck.
And I'm going to give them back the banner, and that's going to be the good luck charm.
The good luck charm.
The good luck charm. So I guess you could say all things came. Have they given the banner back yet?
I believe they have a meeting set up at Fenway, but I don't think they have yet.
Okay, so I guess that's encouraging that they're getting something going there. So I guess in the end, I mean, all good things come to an end, and so I guess we have to give this an A- because, you know, it ended up, you know, getting what they want and all that stuff. And I mean, what it would have been different if it ended up with a Yankee fan, right?
Yeah.
But again, how can you not transport this thing and have it safely arrive? I don't get that.
Yeah, it's very odd.
Yeah, that is strange. So we'll give it an A because, again, all came out the right way.
Well, next up we have, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick is just having a miraculous start to the year based on how his career has been overall. And people have, you know, nicknamed him Fitzmagic recently. But apparently that was a nickname that Minka Fitzpatrick from the Dolphins also had, dating all the way back to his high school New Jersey days. And he decided to go ahead and patent it. Here's Golic and Wingo discussing.
Can I just say, very often can you say when you're comparing on Harvard education
yep.
to a University of Alabama education.
Not that there's anything wrong with it.
No.
A wonderful education.
But in this situation.
But Harvard is Harvard, right?
Advantage Alabama.
Man. So,
yes.
this is incredible. We all know about what Ryan Fitzpatrick is doing in Tampa Bay.
It's Fitzmagic.
Fitzmagic. The term Fitzmagic. So, what do you know? Fitzmagic has been trademarked, but not by Ryan Fitzpatrick, by Minka Fitzpatrick, the DB,
rookie
who just in the NFL from Alabama. He trademarked it. Well, his group did. He didn't go and do it. He filed with the United States Patent and Trademark Office. His group did it on behalf of Minka Fitzpatrick. Fitzmagic. That is a smart business move, just in case this thing turns into anything.
Pretty amazing. So it's like, yeah, and it was funny because I know it was just like a word that came out of Dirk Cutter's mouth after the first game where he called him Fitzmagic, and it caught on. And now we find out that the Dolphins now, with the cornerback taken in the first round, have got the edge on that thing. That's amazing to see it. So I guess you have to give that one a B+ because, again, the Alabama guy, not that Ryan Fitzpatrick, I think, was trying to market anything. He wasn't. I mean, he's just happy about what's going on in their two wins, but that's kind of funny, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, I could see, especially after his appearance last week with the beard, I could see shirts with mm-hmm. him with Deshaun Jackson's chain on and the beard and Fitzmagic. I could see people buying those.
Mm-hmm.
But now the money will not be going to Ryan Fitzpatrick. It will be going to Minka if that happens.
And by the way, speaking of bad business people, how about Jameis Winston, you know, who comes back after suspension that'll come up here in the next, after this game. And, you know, he may have lost his starting job temporarily. But how about the idea that, as a business person, he has even hired an agent. He has no agent right now.
Yeah, well, and he's got bigger problems because the Uber driver that he was suspended for groping is suing him now as well. So he's not having a great year right now, but no. Rightfully so. So
put himself in that position. So what else do we have?
Yeah, next up, the Super Bowl halftime performers have been announced, and it will be Maroon 5. What do you think about that?
I don't know. How good is Maroon 5? I haven't been a big follower of Maroon 5. Kind of got to give me an update.
I mean, they're pretty popular, and they've been around for a while, so lots of hits. I think it's all right. There's quite a few people I saw, Shannon Sharp and some others on Twitter, mad that they didn't pick an Atlanta act, because you have, like Ludacris and mm-hmm. Outkast and Jermaine Dupri all from there. But maybe they'll try to incorporate them still, because they usually have some guest stars come out with the halftime performers.
What's one of Maroon 5's best songs?
Let's see. Their first hit, I think, was called This Love. They have that song Moves Like Jagger. Mm-hmm. Trying to think of some offhand.
Yeah.
Sugar. Howdy was throwing one in there.
I'll give it a B.
We'll play a song coming back from break next time.
Okay, that'll be good. Am I going to like it? I mean, it's got to...
Well, we'll see. Maybe you'll have to hold off your grade till then.
Nah, I'll still give it a B.
Okay.
I guess it's okay. I mean, it'd be nice to get an Atlanta act, but again, it's like, hey, just get an act that is going to be popular, and because I don't know if they get much money for doing that, if they get any money at all, because it's more the reputation of being able to do the Super Bowl is that they can do it. So, hey, congratulations to Maroon 5.
Yeah, all right. Next up, we have reporters are not having a lot of luck with departed Seahawks right now. I told you yesterday that Michael Bennett told the Philadelphia media that he's been talking to them for 10 years and he is sick of it, doesn't want to do it anymore. You already have Marshawn Lynch, who doesn't like talking to the media. And now apparently Rob Domofsky, ESPN Packers reporter, is saying that he approached Jimmy Graham in the locker room and he said he had no time to speak, hadn't talked to the media since July 28th, so Rob Domofsky asked him if he would ever speak to them. He said, that's not my thing. And then when asked if he would just pay the $10,000 fine, he had no response and walked away. Graham was apparently sent a letter this week for failing to comply with the NFL's media policy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I'll give Jimmy a D. Now, I don't give him an F because Jimmy was great with me. I mean, you know how many times I had him on the air, and I was like the only guy in town that he would talk to. Why he's that way? Because he's a great interview. And I don't understand. It's like, particularly, you got a new team, you got a whole new market, all those different things. Why not? And I know the times that we've talked, Jimmy and myself, I mean, he gives you great stuff. He's intelligent. He's a good player, all those different things. But why he's taking that tact, I don't know. But, it seems like once he left New Orleans, there was a bitter feeling for him. I think it went more to Sean Payton than anything else. So, Jimmy, I'm sorry. I'm giving you a D.
All right. Talk to the media, Jimmy Graham. That's it for grades today, Professor.
Okay, and you can check out the show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we will take your text questions. Text us at 710-710. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
This is Maroon 5, Professor.
Okay, yeah, I like it. It's good. No, I get it. Is it Move My Jacket?
Moves Like Jagger.
Moves Like Jagger, okay. Yeah, listen, I just like the beat. I mean, most of the time anymore, it's like you don't know who's doing it. But if you got the beat going, I like it. So I like it. I think it's going to be fine.
All right, Professor approved. Halftime performance.
Halftime performance. That'll be good. All right, so what do we have right now? Because we got text questions with a lot of things going on. A lot of Seahawk questions, I would imagine. A lot of baseball questions. A lot of football questions going on. So what do we have on 710-710?
206 says, Dear Professor, can you please explain cover one and cover three defense?
Okay, well, cover one is basically what you see from Earl Thomas being back there as the lone guy. Because, again, now you can spread out the cornerbacks and all that. So that's cover one, where if the safety was coming over, let's say if Bradley McDougal was on the same side, the same parallel as Earl Thomas, that'll be cover two. But what it does, it gives you more of an ability to have man coverage and have the cornerbacks up at the line of scrimmage. In cover three, now you're having each cornerback in that responsibility, because again, Earl Thomas is going to be back there as kind of the protection, covering just about anything. In cover three, the cornerback has to cover one third of the field. So that's cover one, cover three. And so where cover two is more of that zone type of a defense, where you have the two safeties that are going to be back, and then you basically have all the corners and linebackers. So you can almost have five guys into the coverage, but again, they're playing a little bit more off the line of scrimmage. Cover one, cover three gives you the ability to be more aggressive with your cornerbacks, and then you see where the responsibilities are going to be.
253 says, hey, JC, where is Ed Dixon? A great blocking tight end helping Ifedi could have been game-changing.
Well, he's on the non-football injury list with a groin injury, and I know he wasn't happy about being on that list, but he's going to miss the first six games of the season. So you're not going to see him until the seventh game, and so that's why he's not available.
704 says, has Shoddy intimidated Russell with his approach and demanding he stay in the pocket longer? He seems very unnatural this year in the new system.
I don't know about that. I mean, it's just I can't imagine you can intimidate Russell Wilson, but he's trying to stay in the pocket more. In fact, he probably needs to stay in the pocket more. That's why I think he needs some help, getting some more shorter type passes, some rhythm type things. That's something that they definitely have to figure out, because right now it's just not working. But I don't put it on some intimidation coming from Brian Schottenheimer.
425 says, is Bradley McDougal currently playing at a Pro Bowl caliber level?
I would say probably is. I mean, if you go with Pro Football Focus, I mean, they had him as the third best safety in the league, topped by two guys, one of those guys, Earl Thomas. But what I like is that, again, he's not Cam Chancellor. Okay, we're not confusing him like that. But he's very good at making hits. He's very solid at being able to put him in his position to, come up and stop the run. But what you also like about him is he's a better cover guy, because, I mean, he can go out and do well in coverage. No, I think he's off to a great start.
206 says, will the Raiders playing in Vegas feel like a neutral site game for the home team?
I don't know about that. I mean, they're going to have Raider fans there, and Raider fans are pretty loyal and pretty crazy, because they'll have people coming in from San Francisco and Oakland and Los Angeles and all that. No, I think they'll have pretty good home field advantage.
206 wants to know, John, what do you have the percentage of Hall of Famers who were first or second round draft picks?
I think, just off the top of my head, I was looking at it not closely to get that, but I'd say right now it's probably at about 65% for first-round picks, because, I mean, when you look at it, you take somebody in the top 10 and you figure that those guys have the best chance because they're considered to be the best athletes in any particular draft, and so I'd say probably about 60%, if not more.
360 says, Mr. Professor Clayton, why does the NFL limit the roster size to 53 players? Any chance they increase that in the future? Injuries seem to leave teams pretty thin at some positions.
No, in fact, I think that what they need to do is that outdated formula of having seven inactives. I mean, if you increase them to more than 53, then what use is going to be? You can only dress 46. They need to get to the point where they take the 53 players and then get most of those guys active. I mean, because, you see the Seahawks. I mean, here they were. They had six injuries. They had seven guys inactive, and so what the idea is with some of these old style owners, they feel that if you have six guys hurt and the other team is healthy, you're getting a competitive disadvantage. But hey, every team has to go in there with seven offensive linemen active, and if a couple guys get hurt in the games, which sometimes they will, then you have other problems.
530 says, why did Pete Carroll call a timeout two plays prior to that pick six? They just ran for a first down. first down, and they had the momentum going for them on that drive.
Well, because, I mean, if you go back and hear the complaints, apparently what ended up happening is that Russell Wilson called two checkdowns, and Pete didn't like that, and so he called a timeout because he thought there was going to be a third, and so that just created all kind of confusion. Russell Wilson wasn't happy about it, and so, yeah, I guess you know, Pete kind of stepping in there like he did in the first half, trying to get some long passes going. You know, Pete trying to get some things going with the offense, but I guess pretty much he should probably leave the offense to the offensive guys.
I think Pete also told Brock and Salk yesterday that there was some people that weren't lined up right, and Wilson was mad because he thought he could have gotten it fixed, and he really didn't want them to call that timeout, but they didn't feel comfortable, so they went ahead and called it.
Mm-hmm. Not good.
Yeah. 206 says, hey, Professor, I know it's early, but what is your Super Bowl matchup prediction?
Right now, I mean, I'd say, you know, I mean, you know, until we see what happens with the Patriots, the two best teams right now, I mean, right now, well, there's two in the AFC, you know, Kansas City or Jacksonville. And so maybe with the way Patrick Mahomes is playing, you might want to go with Kansas City, because I don't know if I could ever go with Blake Bortles, although he's done pretty well in the last five, six games that he's played. And I'd say right now you have to lean toward the Rams.
425 says, a Google search says Malik McDowell is still on the Seahawks roster. I thought he was released. What happened?
Well, what happened, he went on the non-football injury list reserve, and so because of that, his name still is attached to the roster as his salary and all that stuff. And until they work out some kind of a settlement, you know, he's technically on the roster, even though, again, he cannot play.
425 says, is Michael Kendricks, Bobby Wagner, and KJ Wright the best linebacker core in the NFL?
Pretty close. I mean, right now you start to wonder. I'll have to see a little bit more from Roquan Smith, because I know in the early part of the game he got run over twice. You start to look at that group in Chicago as being good, because you got, three number one picks, particularly with Khalil Mack and Danny Trevathan being real good. But it's a pretty good core right now.
253 says, what's up, JC? What do you think about having Carson and CJ Procise at the same time during certain plays?
It's okay. I mean, let's put it this way. I think I want to see more of Carson. I didn't want to see much as late. And I think maybe a little bit more of CJ Procise. And again, you know, I like the fact that Rashad Penny was able to, you know, get game adjusted and get some things going. But I still think Carson's the best back and CJ Procise is the best pass catching back that they have. But right now, I mean, having two out there not getting the carries is not what I want to see good. I want to see some plays where they can actually get some carries.
425 says, what are the chances Patrick Mahomes wins MVP this year?
I mean, right now, the way he's playing, has a very good chance. I mean, 10 touchdown passes in two games. I mean, it certainly elevates your chances of doing that. But, you know, still too early to call. But the way he's starting right now puts him under solid consideration.
I mean, you would have to think there might be some kind of slump. It's his first time starting. But, I mean, yeah, obviously off to an extremely impressive start. Has a lot of offensive weapons there.
He really does. I thought they were going to take a step back, not a step forward like this, but he has been fantastic. You know, believe it or not, he and Harvard grad Ryan Fitzpatrick have been the best two quarterbacks in football to start the season.
I know.
Go figure that one out.
Much to, I'm sure, everyone playing fantasy football is dismay, because
yes.
I don't think that many people drafted them high.
I don't think so.
360 says, Professor, have you been surprised by the quality of play our secondary has shown? Five interceptions in two games is impressive.
Yeah, because, I mean, I was just going through some of the numbers, and, you know, Justin Coleman has only allowed two completions in two games. I think it's five completions or so it was 15 passes thrown, I think eight completions against on Shaquille Griffin, and he got the two interceptions. You know, I thought that, you know, Trey Flowers for 72 plays did pretty well, even though technically because of some communication things with Shaquille Griffin and that, you know, he allowed some that went on credit to him, but there was some confusion and some coverage. But no, I think that the secondary has done reasonably well. I mean, it's got to do better, I think, and it did better in this game on third downs, and so it's showing some signs of life, because again, you know, Griffin and Coleman are off to great starts, and you can see the secondary, particularly with Earl Thomas and McDougal, off to great starts.
Ben in Renton wants to know if we need Marcel Reese back.
Probably not. I think that they're getting by with Trey Madden. I guess at this stage, I don't know if Reese would be able to help out on special teams, but Moore has asked for, you know, some of the younger guys to get involved on special teams. I'd like to see him back, but again, it's not going to happen.
360 says, Professor, bigger game for Carson Wentz or Matt Stafford this weekend?
I think it's a bigger game for Matthew Stafford because, again, he's off to an 0-2 start. He's throwing too many bad passes, and they need a win because now the Patriots go in there, and you figure that there's a good chance the Patriots will win, so they're 0-3. In the case of Carson Wentz, I'm sure the expectations are there, but he's also coming off ACL surgery, so you know it's going to take a little bit of time for him to get in rhythm. There's nothing wrong right now with Stafford injury-wise. He's healthy, so he needs the bigger game.
All right, that's it for text today.
Okay, and of course, coming up next, we get a chance to chat with Dave Grosby. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the Professor John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
And joining us right now is Dave Grosby. And so, Dave, I guess it's official now. The Mariners are not going to win the American League West.
Well, they never were.
I know.
I mean, that wasn't the goal going into the season, even when they were at their high water mark. It was still unlikely. Everyone knew the talent that Houston had and could bring to bear, and we're actually seeing it in this little series with the depth they have in their pitching staff with a couple of their starters out. But no, you're right. It's official. It's the first official elimination, with another one coming fairly soon, I'm afraid.
Yep, because what the magic number is, what, 4? And so I would imagine probably maybe by next Monday they could be officially eliminated from the wild card race.
Yeah, that could be. Could definitely be the case.
Sad, sad, sad. No
yeah,
question.
It is. It really is. They had it's a season of lost opportunities, I guess, is the way to look at it, John. And I thought that their response to it publicly, you've heard Jerry DePoto on the air here on the station saying that they're embarrassed, disappointed. I mean, they may win 90 games this year, but it's not going to take away the disappointment of this season. And the fact of the matter was, I always believed, I said it at the start of the year, if they won 79 games and made it to the postseason, the year was a success. If they won 95 games, didn't make it to the postseason, it wasn't a success. I mean, their goal, and they're in line with that kind of thinking as well, their goal is to be in the postseason. And they really, unlike other years where they've been close and they made a run in September, things like that, this was the first time in a long time where they were 20, 25 games over 500 and didn't make the postseason. So it's definitely a disappointment.
Yeah. What now, of course, I mean, how do you think the team is going to – because, again, I think the one encouraging thing is that they're doing pretty well against the Astros. I mean, at the moment, they're 9-9. If they win tonight's game, then they're going to be 10-9, so they actually win the series, surprisingly. And they've done well against the Astros down in Houston.
Yep, which is a surprise, but that's one of those stats like what's the football one that you use? If you win by too much of a close score.
Yeah, if you have too many one possession games that you win on the net, then the next year you drop down.
So I mean, it seems that way with those series because the Astros really took their measure a year ago, and the Mariners had great success against the A's, didn't have that this year. So that's one that you can't necessarily hang your hat on. Although it beats the alternative, I suppose. Makes you think that you're close to them, but I mean, it's 10-9 if they get there, and it's all the other games that they're worried about, and they got a really interesting off season because they got to decide who they are, where they are, and what they are in a big way. I mean, if they're the team that played the first half of the year, which had the poor run differential that you talked about, if they're the team that played the second half of the year and really, really were about a 500 club, if no better than that, is what they should have been for the year. They've got veterans who they're paying a ton of money to have been very disappointing. They've got other veterans who they've got to decide on. If you're in a rebuild mode, do you re-sign a 39-year-old DH even though he's your most productive hitter? You don't really have a farm system prepared to augment what you're trying to do, but you could trade some of your guys to fix that farm system. But then you're telling your fan base, which has been the most patient in baseball, basically the most patient in sports, to wait. That we're not ready yet. I think it's very tough to make a decision like that if you're a 90-win team.
Yeah.
You got to feel like you're close. So it's going to be a very interesting offseason and a very challenging offseason.
Well, how do you think they attack the hitting problems? Because you think on paper that shouldn't be the case, but now in reality it is a problem because instead of being a 4.7 run per game team, they're basically 4.1.
Well, and I mean, you got to determine a few things. Is this an off year for Kyle Seager? Or is Kyle Seager not the player that he used to be? Is this an off year for D. Gordon, or is he the player that he was the first half of the year? I mean, you've got some other bats that have done well for you, but you're lacking in some power in some spots, so you got to make some calls as to where it's going to be. I mean, you got Ryan Healy, Robinson Cano. You got to figure out how those guys are going to play and where those guys are going to play. You know, catching has been a black hole in terms of offense, an absolute black hole. So, I mean, you got to determine what you're going to do there. Mike Zunino is really good with his occasional home runs and terrific in dealing with the pitching staff, but he's hitting 195. I mean, you can't have that. So it's part of the process. And then they got an aging rotation. They got an ace who has struggled with injuries and has really not looked like an ace the last half of the season. You got Felix Hernandez, who you're paying just about the most money to outside of Robinson Cano, who doesn't even look like he belongs in the rotation anymore. You got a lot of issues.
No question about it. And speaking of issues, there's a lot of issues right now in the Seahawks as they try to sort out where it's going with their offense and where it's going with the defense. But boy, I mean, you talk about a tough week. I mean, Russell Wilson throws a pick six. People are now picking on him. Confusion in the backfield of who's in and who's out. And then, of course, you've got Tom Johnson, who was cut. You thought he was going to come back, and he goes to Minnesota.
Yeah, I mean, how about that? I mean, that is just, you know, for a guy who didn't even play. Didn't play a single snap in the game, which was the whole point in cutting him loose, was that, you know, you needed to have a safety, and the guy didn't even play. And then you lose Johnson, who Pete Carroll was very effusive in his praise of after the first week of the season, who earned a starting job. You know, you got Russell Wilson with issues with the play calling already, you know, coming out. They're not running the ball enough. Yeah, there's a ton of issues with the Seahawks, but they did get a piece of good news a little while ago. I'm sure you mentioned it, that Bobby Wagner, according to a couple reports on Twitter, is going to be back playing against Dallas this week. It's great news for the Seahawks, but again, you know, as we talked about yesterday and we'll talk about a little bit today, it wasn't the defense that was the problem on Monday night. You know, Wagner makes him a little bit better, but it wasn't the defense that was the issue. It was the offense that was the issue, and you're not getting Doug Baldwin back, who might be the biggest guy missing right now.
Well, yeah, because and when you really think about the big picture, I mean, you can see why there's going to be some issues with Russell trying to sync up because, I mean, really, for the most part, KJ Wright or TJ Lockett is the only returning receiver that he has. You know, Brandon Marshall's new, Jerron Brown is new, David Moore, in all effect, is new because he was a practice squad guy last year. Keenan Reynolds is new. So four of your guys, your five receivers, are pretty new to you, and you don't have the timing down with them in games. You have maybe some in practice, but not in games.
You don't seem to like the play caller either, do you?
I like the play caller.
No, I'm talking about Russell Wilson.
Oh, no, I like him. I mean, let's put it this way. I wouldn't say he's one of the top five quarterbacks in the league and say that's not liking him. I mean, I think at the moment you can see there's a predictability. Just like, hey, when we were talking 2 weeks ago and you started seeing things creep onto the injury report, and you said, don't feel good about this going to Denver, and it turned out that they lose. Well, there's some predictable things that you saw that develop, and obviously the Doug Baldwin thing was one. And then, of course, I mean, you have basically effectively almost two new tight ends out there because Nick Vinette was more of a third than a number one, and now Disley's the starter at tight end, so you have a whole new group of skilled people.
You do, but you're supposed to be running the ball as well, John. You're not doing that either. So, I mean, it's not a good place they're in right now, but they've been very good at home in the last 15 years, 14-1. They'll hope that pays off against the Cowboys.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, it seems like when they open the season on the road, they usually do go 0-2 for whatever reason.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that weird?
It is.
Well, under Pete Carroll.
Right, it is. Well, it'll be interesting to see, John. It'll be very interesting to see.
Yeah, so no, I think that's going to be the big challenge right now is to regain the confidence. And I would imagine, you know, that the crowd can help getting. I think you can see now after two games of only having 38 carries, there is going to probably be more of a commitment to try to run the football because if not, it's like, and then, you know, maybe Pete Carroll might not jump in there and try to make some suggestions of throwing some long passes in the second quarter.
Maybe. We'll see.
Well, that's going to be a challenge. So what's going to be on Bob Gross and Tom today?
Well, Pete Carroll's weekly press conference. We're going to talk with Jake Heaps, and it's Washington Wednesday. We'll talk to Arizona State head coach Herm Edwards.
Oh, my buddy Herm.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Oh, that's great. I mean, I love working with him. He was so good, but it's always good to have him back into coaching because he's such a good, good guy.
He's off to a pretty good start at Arizona State.
He really is, as are the Huskies right now, 2-1. And finally, how about how bad things are for Chip Kelly down at UCLA?
Yeah, he's already got parents complaining about him. I mean, geez, they're 0-3. They get embarrassed by Fresno State. yes, it's not a good start for the man that our pal El Hombre calls the maximum leader.
Mm-hmm, absolutely not. And, of course, that'll be Bob Graza, Tom, coming up next. Good to hear from Herm Edwards on the show. And, of course, I'll be back tomorrow at 10. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.